From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is your Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk British pronunciations and pretentious words. Not necessarily the same thing. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Okay, you guys both ready to go? Okay, awesome.
Ready to rock.
Ready to rock. Where does that come from? I wonder who the first person who was ready to rock was.
I always get fascinated with that because someone did start it.
Yeah.
And then everybody said it.
Yeah.
Or did like 100 people say it?
I wonder.
They're saying it's sexual connotations in the 1920s.
Whoa.
And then in the 1950s, music genre by Alan Freed.
Yeah.
Oh, ready to rock and roll. Yeah.
That's what I always would have figured it came from. But the 20s, that was a wild time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it always gets me how we don't realize, because my first apartment in New York was on 23 East 10th Street. And it was in the old Albert Hotel, which apparently was like a hotbed of sex and drugs and jazz.
And
you know? And who knew? Yeah. I mean, you know, it would be, had become like this nice little apartment building, but it was like, it was always like, whoa, the Albert. You know?
If these walls could talk, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Locked, cocked, and ready to rock.
That sounds...
An old firearms phrase.
Oh, wow.
From the Colt 45. Huh. That's really a difficult... Fletcher, that's a really difficult question now.
Well, you should write it in. We can read it out
that's
loud.
That's a good idea. I'll give you more than 2 seconds to do research on it.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I guess
okay,
we've already...
Okay, so we...
Yeah, I think we've already gotten started. So let's almost jump in. To the show today. First, I do want to thank a listener who left a wonderful review for us on Apple Podcasts. This was from Q Mab. I wonder, is this Queen Mab? Could it be, I don't know, Quentin Mab? I don't know what the Q stands for.
I assumed Queen too, but I like Quentin Mab better
now. I like Quentin. Yeah, so, I like the name.
So Quentin. Or Queen, says, I just started this wonderful podcast and am enjoying going through the back catalog. Love being entertained and learning something at the same time. 5 stars. Thank you very much. And I bring that up not just to thank QMAB, but also to remind you that if you are listening to the podcast, you can go to any of your podcast platforms that let you leave a review, and you can leave one too. That helps more people find us, which is always good.
Leave a rave review.
Yes, please.
I think a good review is great too.
Okay.
Although years ago we had a friend, we had a book and we asked her to review it. We were just starting out. And I think it was like 5 stars, you know, up to 5 stars. She gave it a 3-star.
It was on Amazon,
Was it? She gave it a 3-star. We said, why did you give us a...
No, Ross, I'm sorry. It was 4 stars.
Four stars. Okay, why did you give us... She goes, well, I wanted to, like, make it look real.
I hate that,
and I
right?
Like, ah!
Yeah. It's 5 stars or nothing. Don't even leave it. Okay, well, so we've spent a couple of weeks going through a whole lot of pet peeves from our listeners, and we're going to keep that going, although maybe not exclusively pet peeve centric episodes. I'm sure we'll have some of those coming up as well, but it's always good, of course, to jump back into some other things. This week, I know we are talking about some other things, but we also have some pet peeves to address.
Yeah, I want to say one thing, Fletcher. We've really enjoyed the pet peeves. We'd love to keep getting them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what we're thinking is just sprinkling them through, you know, throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
One or two here, one or two there, because I really enjoy, I mean, Kath and I both really enjoy them.
I also think we should still do a special, you know, Peevalooza. I can't say that. I just cannot say Peevalooza. Whatever, that, the big thing. The big one show every now and then, I think would be fun as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and we've got one right now. This is from Arthur in D.C.
Hi, Arthur.
Have you noticed how many Americans have begun using whilst instead of while? It seems pretentious to me, an attempt to sound like an upper-class Brit rather than a run-of-the-mill American.
Huh.
I actually heartily agree with Arthur.
to address his first question, I have not noticed that. I have not heard so many people doing that. Of course, I live, you know, with the salt of the earth here in the Midwest.
I've heard it. I've heard whilst, and I definitely, as does Kathy, I agree with Arthur. I don't really like the usage that much, but it's an interesting usage because, first of all, why did it happen? And they think, no one's really sure, but it's in linguistic terms, it's relatively recent, from the 1400s. And it's probably by association with superlatives in ST, you know, biggest, etc. And then whilst kind of like shoved its again, and then now we have, and then the biggest, etc. got things like against. They used to have alongst, which I don't say at all, and no one does nowadays. Amongst, mm-hmm. I think you can occasionally mm-hmm. hear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely amongst.
But whilst is up there with them at this point. And then betwixt and between. Betwixt.
Which you don't really hear except for betwixt and between. That's like really the fossil
exactly.
phrase. Yeah.
But it's, I guess the X there is like an ST in that sense.
I just want to say, I don't think I've heard anyone say whilst. I think I have seen it written. I see it written a lot.
Hmm.
Ooh, very good, Kath. That's an interesting distinction. I think wondering now, yeah.
And I think it's part of that sort of, we've talked so many times about like pomposities and people trying to sound like that faux erudite British hello, hello, hello. And I think that's where the whilst comes in.
Do the British say this?
Apparently so.
Okay.
It's more common in British English than it is in American English.
But here we go. We're going to probably get, my bet would be that the Brits are probably switching over. My guess would be while is becoming more common in England, just as whilst is becoming more common in English,
you know,
in American English.
You know what's funny is we say that periodically, that British English is starting to take on more of the American, the words.
And vice versa.
Yeah, the other way around, because people here are watching all the British murder mysteries or whatever we've got on, you know, there's so many coming now that people are watching on their various streaming platforms. And so we're starting to take on a bunch of their words, which is probably why more people are saying whilst, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to take on more of our words. That's really, really funny.
People love, and particularly with language, they love variety. Mm-hmm. They love playing with words and playing around with it. And I think Americans play around with British and British play around with American. And, you know, pretty soon we've got like a weird hodgepodge of who's saying what
or,
when.
I mean, I wonder, is it going to end up converging then? Are we going to have, or are we just going to end up flipping? Are we going to be the Brits and are they going to be the Americans?
Or are we going to start saying like Walloon instead or something? Someone's going to get
Walloon.
Walloon, I was walking down the street. Who knows? Oh, there's a couple of interesting things, though, about whilst and whilst. Whilst and while can be used as an adverb or a conjunction, but while can also be used as a noun and a verb. We chatted for a while. Makes sense.
Uh-huh. You cannot say we chatted for a whilst.
Well, I guess you
can,
could, but I wouldn't
be wrong.
That's right.
So yeah, so the problem is you they're pretty much, when it's a conjunction and adverb, while and whilst interchangeable. When it's a noun or verb, it's only while.
Yeah. Okay.
No whilst.
Mm-hmm.
But the real bottom line is we found this really nice little opinion piece, and his opinion, he's the opinions editor of the Gettysburgian.
Joshua Wagner, he deserves credit because I like some of his lines.
His opinion is stop using whilst. We were like, the minute we saw that, we thought, Josh, a man after our own hearts. But he was saying that the word while is used. I loved this statistic. 632.8 times out of every million words, whereas whilst is only used 27.7 times per million.
Wow.
According to the Oxford English Corpus. So that's quite a divide.
Yeah.
And then they say that Americans using whilst in a sentence, it's only 6.9% of the usage in the United States. So you've got 90 some odd being used in Britain and I guess colonies, maybe India, they use whilst. Former colonies. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
I loved his statement, given that, you know, how it's being used also with conjunctions and all that. He goes, whilst is like a specialized kitchen gadget from a televised ad channel. It has limited use, and you don't talk about it in public.
The thing is, though, and I mean, no offense, Josh, on this one, you do talk about it in public, because I think the people who are using Whilst love using Whilst and want you to hear them using Whilst.
Oh, absolutely.
Or read them using Whilst. I think it's definitely like a look at me, look at me, look at my Whilst.
Although you yourself said you haven't heard it, but have seen it.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. You see it, and they're going, look at me, look, I'm using Whilst.
But you don't talk about it, is what Joshua said.
Interesting.
Yes.
Oh, okay, Ross.
There might be a distinction. We don't know, though. Anyway, all three of us agree Whilst should go in the rubbish heap.
Yeah, I mean, it's silly. If people want to use it, they're having fun, that's fine. I'm not going to tell people not to have fun.
But I think they should use it.
They shouldn't have fun with it. Yeah.
Look, what I do quietly in my own head is my business.
And then we had Albert from San Francisco toss this in another email. It was a larger email about pet peeves. Mm-hmm. Not to worry, Albert, we're going to get back to the others another time, we promise. But it was, remember a while back we talked about the pronunciation of jaguar?
Right.
And he just said it. I just was fascinated by this. He said, apropos to the pronunciation of jaguar/jaguar, there's another word that Brits pronounce along the same lines. Have you ever heard a Brit pronounce Nicaragua?
Oh, goodness. Ross and I both.
Okay, can you guys approximate it? He has it written out phonetically. Can you approximate a British person saying Nicaragua?
It's something like Nicaragua.
That's what I was going to say. Nicaragua. Yeah.
You both have it. Yes. Yes, it is. Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Nicaragua.
But on that line, Fletcher, we were wondering just quickly to give you a little mini test or a little mini discussion. British and American pronunciation, you know, across the pond. How do they pronounce it? How do we pronounce it? And let's start with this metal we use in foil.
Oh.
How do you pronounce that in American English, and how do you pronounce that in British English?
Yes, that is aluminum to us Americans. And for some reason that I still don't understand, it's aluminium to the Brits.
Yes.
The interesting thing is the original spelling, Sir Humphrey Davy, who I wrote about in his book in 1812, Principles of Chemical Philosophy, described the metal he had discovered, and he called it aluminum, not aluminium.
Oh, goodness.
So originally it really was aluminum. But for some reason, the Brits decided years later that changing it to aluminium was more euphonious. It matched the I-U-M ending of other chemical. It's uh-huh. Like we talk all the time about like the Latinate, you know, adding the Latin stuff. Here you have an example of like, why not? Aluminum was fine.
I know. And actually, no. I mean, not to be Joe Latin here, but U-M ending is also a Latin ending, as is I-U-M ending. So uh-huh. They could have been, their old Romans would have been happy with either, I think, in that case.
But now, what are the other chemical elements if they wanted to keep it matching them? I just realized that.
Hydrogen, which is not.
Yeah.
Oxygen.
I know, I'm trying to put.
Oxygen,
Alumagen,
which is not.
That wouldn't really work, would it?
I don't know. I'm just trying to. That's a good question, Gabby.
Yeah, because suddenly they're saying that, and it's like, well, what are they matching?
Yeah. No, that's one of those things where people say stuff and then you kind of go,
okay, sodium, helium,
sodium,
potassium.
There's a lot of IUM.
Potassium, no, IUM.
There's a lot
yeah, there
of
are
IUMs.
A lot of them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But there,
yeah.
Are no, there are no UMs, are there?
I mean,
no,
indium,
selenium,
beryllium.
Platinum.
Platinum.
Platinum. Very good, Kath. Very good.
Well, I just read it. So I didn't come off the top of my head.
Molybdenum. Molybdenum has a UM. It's hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
But everything else is IUM, though.
Yeah.
But look, that's two plus aluminum. That's three.
Yeah.
That's like seems to be a critical mass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I got to admit, it's more fun to say aluminium, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah,
it sounds good.
But
I like it,
you
too.
Know what? If I had to ask for the aluminium foil every time I needed to wrap something, that would be a pain.
Okay. So now I'm going to give you a list of words, Fletcher,
oh,
for
great.
You to pronounce.
Oh, lovely.
Pronounce them in English. I mean, American English. Ooh, that was a definite. American English and British English, and tell us if you can determine a pattern here.
Will you also tell us, I think a lot of us in the United States assume that Canadians say things the same way we in the United States do. Will you tell us, Ross, if any of these are said more the British way in Canada?
Okay, I'll tell you right off the bat, no.
Okay.
That list right there, no.
Oh, goodness. Oh, you know what? I'll bet a lot of these are syllable stress related, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay.
Very good guess.
Thank you. Okay, the first word, we call it a salon. I don't know exactly what British people would call this, but I'm guessing it's something more like salon.
Yes, apparently.
So continuing, I guess, with the syllable stress thing, B-A-L-L-E-T is ballet here in the United States. I remember this very much from the movie Billy Elliot, that the British call this ballet.
Yes.
Ballet.
It's exactly like that.
moving on, B-U-F-F-E-T, that's a buffet here in the United States. Is it something more like buffet or something in the UK? Or am I making that up?
Buffet.
Buffet.
I don't know. We can check it. But we're talking really about stress here. Let's check that out, actually.
I think it's more or less still like buffet. Buffet.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm doing this fake act.
I know. It's great. I thought you got the right idea. With British English, usually the word stress is on the first syllable. Two syllables, we pronounce it second syllable. They pronounce it first syllable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a general sort of rule.
Well, and a lot of these words look French, too, don't they?
They do, which is interesting, actually. In many of the loan words we have in English from French, the American pronunciation has a final syllable stress, which is much more like the French, like ballet, whereas the British English does the earlier syllables. So you do have, in these two-syllable words particularly, the American English sounding much more like French than the British English, which you wouldn't expect, I don't think, for some reason.
Although the British don't, I mean, they, as we talked about with Jaguar and Nicaragua, it seems like they try to make loan words their own rather than hold to whatever language it came from. Almost like, yes, we're taking this and we're going to use it the way we want to.
And we're making it ours.
That's right.
Yeah. And you'd better like it.
So there's another set of words. You know what? I'm just going to say these as the Americans do, because I think we're kind of hitting the same thing each time. So we've got a set of verbs, I guess. Castrate, collate, cremate, curate, dictate, dilate, donate, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those have the stress on the first syllable for Americans, and these are all two syllable words, but they're
again
verbs.
You have the second syllable stress in British, correct?
Do you? Okay. I wouldn't have just been able to tell you that without the context of what we're doing here. I don't recall Brits saying something like castrate or collate.
I don't either. That's really
there's some. They say that castrate, collate, cremate, curate, dictate, dilate, donate, fixate, frustrate are second syllable stress. However, others that are on there like conflate, create, equate, elate, inflate, they're the same, first syllable stress.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, in British, I just did Collins Dictionary, castrate, he just said. Castrate in American. Castrate.
I think it's just that you don't really talk about castration often.
Well,
when in London. I mean, I don't know.
Then we have an interesting one here now, going on to more syllables. We have these three words.
Right. I will read the words as an American would, and then I will go back. So the words are advertisement. Advertisement. Now I'm confused. Laboratory and controversy.
Okay, the British now. Try the British.
Yeah, the British would be advertisement.
Yes.
Laboratory?
Yes.
Okay, and this one just seems harder than they need to make it. Controversy.
Now, this is an interesting one because we put this in and we did a little more research on it, and there's a big controversy in England and in America over controversy, whatever. A lot of times it's listed as having the British pronouncing it that middle syllable way, or, you know, controversy.
Controversy?
Yeah, controversy or whatever. Saying it comes from the influence of the word's Latin origin, laboratorium, etc. However, a lot of British say the traditional British pronunciation is, as we pronounce it, controversy.
Oh.
And that the second stress pattern is more recent, which I thought was really interesting.
That is interesting. You know, I mean, I'm like everybody else, and I watch a fair number of British television shows, too. And I usually do hear them say controversy. I don't hear controversy.
Exactly. That could be a recent change, which is interesting.
So now they're really pulling an aluminium, aren't they?
Yes, it seems
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, that's true.
But it really got interesting because I looked at a couple of linguistic sites in there. I mean, there's a huge, like a big bun fight about this. Everyone's screaming back and
controversy.
Forth.
Controversy.
I hate that. It's hard to say.
Okay, so the bottom line is that British English tends to do the stresses different than American. We understand that.
Sure.
So let's go back to whilst. This is something we're doing because we got a number of these. We had people, the pet peeve stuff, saying that their pet peeves are people using polysyllabic, pretentious words, although whilst isn't polysyllabic, but that's okay, when a simpler one would suffice. So we're thanking Kyle, Ashley, Tom, someone who didn't leave their name, but is from Spokane. And these were the words, we're giving them some of the words they mentioned in their emails and some we ourselves found complaining about the same thing. And we want you to weigh in on these with us. Are these good, solid, usable words, or are they pretentious, useless, and we really should just, like, let them, you know, don't use them?
Yeah, and in some cases there's a simple synonym for these words, but is the word itself a little, does it have a little more kick or something to it? And right. The first word we're going to do is plethora.
Oh.
As in, we're going to use a sentence. There's a plethora of jerks in the audience today.
I beg your pardon.
And, you know, Fletcher, the synonym is excess or abundant. What do you think? Good word, bad word?
Look, I like plethora. I like plethora a lot. I am a child of the 80s. And so there is a very specific scene in the movie Three Amigos that
yes, definitely. Yeah, I love that scene.
And so I used to recite that when I was a kid because I just thought it was so funny. And so a plethora will always have a very nice, soft place in my heart.
That's a fun, it's a surprisingly fun film. I really enjoyed it at the time.
It is.
But yes, I agree with you. I think it's fine. Kath, what do you think?
Because to me, plethora does not just mean excess or abundance. I think there's a finesse to it, or there's a nuance, I think. I don't think saying there's, like, you know, gosh, there's so many. I'm trying to think of plethora. I like it. That's simple. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's overfull, kind of overflowing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I like the word too. I have a personal problem with plethora, though, and I got into a real bad habit. We were doing an interview with, I was doing an interview with someone, I forget where. And she loved the word, but she kept saying plethora.
I was just about to ask.
And I started, I went back for the interview, I was talking to Kathy, and I started saying plethora because I liked how it sounded.
You did, I remember,
and,
yeah.
Do you remember that? And then a couple of times, like in regular conversation, I would chuck in plethora and realize, you know, oh my gosh, what am I saying? Next word. Catherine, do you want to read this one?
The next word is milieu. M-I-L-I-E-U. As in, I live in a very academic milieu.
Hmm.
So what would the simpler synonym be, Fletcher, do you think?
I mean, it's kind of like an arena, a sphere of, none of these are good words, though. I mean, like, none of those are better than milieu.
We have surroundings, medium, environment.
Yeah, environment. I guess environment. Although if somebody's talking about an academic milieu, I'm not going to be surprised if they use the word milieu.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the key to me. It has like a slight, Kathy was talking about the nuance with plethora. And this one has a slight academic-y kind of, you know, tone to it as well, I think. So what do you think about it? Like it or not?
I don't hear that overused or anything. I don't really have a problem with it because it's not like some of these other words that maybe we'll get to, but I mean, the one I like to bring up all the time, of course, is utilize instead of use. I think that's about the biggest worst example of all of this to me. And so I don't hear people say milieu all that much. So it doesn't really bother me. I guess if I heard people overusing it, then maybe it would spill into that utilize territory for me. I'm not sure.
I don't really mind it. To some degree, it has a slightly, I live in a very academic environment. I don't know. Doesn't quite work as well. I live in academic surroundings, sort of works.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I think there's a specificity. I don't think, because the synonyms environment and blah-de-blah don't seem exact. Milieu, to me, It technically means middle place, which is interesting. So what?
Yeah,
would the
you're
middle
surrounded
place...
by you're surrounded by it all. And I think that you were talking about, Kathy, about subtlety and nuance. And I think to some degree, it does give me that feeling, even though, you know, we not necessarily know lieu means, you know, place or whatever. I do get the feeling I'm surrounded by this sort of thing. So I live in academic surroundings, I guess, might work. But that doesn't, I don't know. I like, but there's a slight element of place as well. I think it works fine for me.
You know, I think it depends on where you would use it. Like you're talking about an academic milieu, that makes sense. But let's say you're pointing somebody to a restaurant that's in a rundown part of town, and the restaurant's actually a pretty nice building, right? You'd say it's a beautiful building in an otherwise decrepit milieu. You wouldn't say
no,
that.
Right? Never, no,
never. I kind of like it.
No, you're right, Fletcher. I think that's, I would say it's a beautiful building in bad surroundings,
yeah,
or a bad area.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bad area, but it's a great building. I agree with you.
Yeah. I think that a milieu needs to know its place, if you will.
Yes.
Ah,
well, well said, Kat. Yes.
Okay, Fletcher, I gave you the next word already and the sentence.
Yeah. We'll just read the sentence because I think we'll be able to pick out the word. There are many good reasons there are many good reasons to pray, but only one rises above the vicissitudes of life. I wouldn't have been able to tell you what vicissitudes were. I like the word. It's fun to say. I see here that you've given me synonyms, changes or alterations.
Which is exactly the Latin origin of the word.
Okay.
Turnings, changes.
I got to tell you, I have never, ever used the word vicissitudes.
Oddly enough, I have in one case, which is the vicissitudes of life. I think it's like post-snow bills. It's like an idiom that is stuck. I would say the vicissitudes of life, possibly. Mm-hmm. Ah, the vicissitudes of life. But that's the only way I would ever use it, I don't think. I can't see any other use. And when you use it as vicissitudes of life, it's like a kind of a plug-in idiom that I think kind of makes sense. I can sort of see it. Mm-hmm. And like in that sentence, no one rises above the changes of life doesn't quite work, alterations, because you sort of picture like a never-ending flux, good news, bad news, everything happening all the time. And there it works in that one idiom. That's the only place I would use it.
Yeah, I'm just quickly chugged in. We have vicissitudes of friendship, vicissitudes of progress, vicissitudes of life. I just looked at the news. Vicissitude in chaos.
Yeah, they kind of work. I'm not sure I would say them. Vicissitudes of life, I probably possibly would say.
Vicissitudes of aging. I don't care for it. I don't like it. I'm never going to use it. Okay.
It doesn't bother me that much for vicissitudes of life.
Yeah.
Although even I said it, it's like I don't use it that much. For all of that. But if someone said vicissitudes of life, I don't think I'd go, wow, you're being a little too fancy here. I'd think it's just a statement.
Yeah.
It's
I think if you said vicissitudes of my home or vicissitudes of aging,
I find
that really repugnant.
Yeah. I can take life sometimes. But, yeah.
Other days.
Next word.
Oh, okay. Okay, interesting. My taste is very pedestrian. I'm not sure I would say that sentence, but I do. I use the word pedestrian sometimes to mean just sort of, what's another word? Sort of like just run of the mill, not particularly.
Run of the mill.
Yeah.
We had two synonyms, boring and uninteresting. I think run of the mill is better as a synonym. Lowbrow, maybe, which no one ever uses anymore, but lowbrow in the old sense probably would be.
I wouldn't think pedestrian is lowbrow necessarily, though. I don't think that's an apt synonym.
Well, they have it in this list. I just looked it up.
No, I'm sure they do, but I'm saying that to me, I don't think that works because something could be pedestrian, not lowbrow, because like everybody rich could be doing it too. I mean,
yeah, but lowbrow means. Here's a quote just right now from Reddit. After more lowbrow pedestrian films from the early 70s, I think it does sort of fit. It doesn't really matter. I think it probably fits. Because it's saying basically not serious, not intellectual, not, that's the definition of lowbrow,
I don't
not
know.
Sophisticated.
I just think it's not particularly interesting.
That's what I think of, sort of run of the mill, like you said to me.
It doesn't connote anything like regarding sophistication. It's just.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it's just not.
It doesn't to me. I'm with you, Fletcher. It doesn't to me either. It just seems sort of like, I've seen it. It's like, whatever.
You know,
I have this definition here. It's a person walking. I it's funny. I have a different. I mean, there are two. I just looked it up. There are two ideas about it. I have more of the lowbrow thing. Next word is.
Wait, can we go back? Can we go back for a second? And I know I'm gonna make us run long by doing this, but let's talk about why that word means what it does for us. Because it's easy to see why pedestrian is a person walking. It's like a person who's using their feet, right? Ped.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that also something that's day-to-day, run-of-the-mill?
Because it's interesting because they're really apparently literally contrasting on foot with on horseback, in effect.
Hmm.
So it's prosaic, it's plain, it's mm-hmm. not zippy and
yes.
swift and
yeah.
woo.
Okay, all right, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Because I had the same question, that's why, which is why I was able to answer your question, because it just seems sort of odd.
Yeah.
Well, it's a person like walking on the road or a pavement versus riding or driving. I think it's mostly from the 20th century, though, where it got that new thing, I think.
I mean, in the 1700s.
I have it too, but I have it being used much more frequently in the 20th century as that sort of thing in a pejorative sense. It's hard to really find that.
I have it starting in 1716.
Really?
In the OED of writing, prosaic, dull, uninspired,
okay,
undistinguished.
That's interesting. Okay,
commonplace,
that's interesting.
Ordinary. 1716, then a lot in the 1800s.
Okay, so I was wrong. Okay, I thought it was later. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Fletcher, you've limbed.
No, thank you. Nope. We do not need this word. I have no interest in this. This is one of my least favorite words.
I completely agree with you. This is
it's times like this that we love you, Fletcher.
Yeah. This one I'm definitely going to assign to the 20th century. I mean, 21st century. It was in the early 2000s. New York Times book critic Mashiko Kakutani. She basically kept, I think she used limb, she was known as the queen of limb, the first lady of limb, etc. She used this word, it became so ubiquitous in Publishers Weekly. Remember, Kathy?
Yes, I do.
Everything
remember.
Everything was limb.
They
this
called
author,
her a lymphomaniac.
Yes, I love that one too. And limb means illuminate, and it comes from the Middle English, luminum. It comes earlier from the Latin, which means to, in effect, like illuminate or burnish or outline or some sort of thing. And it got everywhere. I think this is an awful word. I don't like it. I would never use it.
Obviously, Fletcher agrees. Well, for me also, I think I hate it because it's always in, or not always, but often in reviews, whether mm-hmm. it's film, books, whatever. And it's like, I got so sick of limbing. And it just stuff it.
Although it collapsed after she left the Times.
Hmm.
There, if you look it up on the Google Ngram with writing, it seems to completely collapse by in the later 2000s. So fortunately, this word, we don't like it, and it's going away.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is interesting. We had, and this actually fits, I think, because I agree with it. We had a word mentioned in an earlier pet peeve email earlier in the episode, apropos.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Kathy even said that word in our episode a week ago.
So what do we feel about apropos, which means with reference to, with regard to, with respect to, regarding, et cetera, et cetera. How do we feel about it?
Well, the way people say it now is that it is like it's very apropos,
mm-hmm.
meaning like it's appropriately related to this, like it is appropriate mm-hmm. to use it. Or they might say, which is what Kathy did, apropos of nothing. Meaning,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I use that all the time. Yeah. I say that all the time. Yeah.
I don't mind it, frankly. I don't think I really use it, unless I'm saying, "Oh, that's very apropos." You know, if I'm pretending to be a little whatever highfalutin, but it doesn't bother me particularly.
Ross?
No, not at all.
I love it. I use it all the time. I'm very pro apropos.
I'm just looking at it, too. I mean, like, if he had said with regard to, that sounds a little bit too formal.
Yeah.
If he had said regarding, yeah. With respect to, no. With reference to sounds like it's a memo. So
yeah,
I'm kind of happy with apropos in the other sense. Not very apropos, but apropos to whatever you said. I think it kind of works. I'm not sure
I think it's much more on point, yeah. The only thing I don't like it when people spell it as two words, like at and propos. I like it as one word.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's done like that. And sometimes people put the accent over the A, which really don't care for.
Yeah, we don't need
that. But that's like resume drives me crazy.
Yeah, that drives up the wall. But I think apropos works in this case. I mean, Fletcher, like, you know, seriously, could you think of another way of saying it? Like, regarding what you said earlier, you know, regarding your pet peeve episode of 15 March or whatever,
yeah,
what would you say?
Probably regarding or as to.
Yeah.
But whatever, if somebody says apropos, that's fine. I might think it's a little extra fancy, but I don't. It doesn't bother me.
Well, apparently I'm very fancy.
You're very fancy.
I love it.
Kathy, you always have been. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.